Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates with the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 123 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling A Visit to LOMO, the Apollo 11 of Snake River Dams. Why, you wonder, do I call Lower Monumental Dam, located 6 miles south of Colotus, the Apollo 11 of Snake River Dams? Well, both are celebrating a 50th year anniversary in 2019. Joe Bippert, the Washington Grain Commission's program director, and I took the 106-mile drive from Spokane to the affectionately abbreviated LOMO on March 19th. The dam was nearing the end of a coordinated 3-week March lock outage when lock gates and other important structures all along the river are undergoing their annual inspection, maintenance, and repairs. Our field trip to LOMO was part of an effort by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Walla Walla District, and the Pacific Northwest Waterways Association to educate river users about the need for ongoing upgrades required to keep the aging infrastructure operating in tip-top shape. As you'll hear ahead, the older our dam becomes, the more attention it demands, not unlike highways and bridges, where it's obviously easier for people to see the results of ongoing maintenance. I know farmers who have strict rules regarding equipment upkeep, but I would argue the Corps puts them to shame. Based on what I heard during the tour, maintenance is next to godliness when it comes to keeping LOMO and the other dams and locks in the system operating. The 4 lower Snake River dams were authorized by Congress in 1945, but President Dwight Eisenhower had other ideas when he came into office. In 1953, he issued a policy of no new starts for federal multipurpose dams. Washington Senator Warren G. Magnuson did an end run around the prohibition in 1961, however, securing $1 million worth of startup funds for the dam. Construction began the same year. LOMO cost $211 million to build at the time, or close to $1.5 billion in today's dollars, and that doesn't include the 3 additional generators added between 1975 and 1981. The dam is named for a rock formation in Walla Walla County, 3 miles to the northeast. When Lewis and Clark traveled through in 1805, they named the feature, which rises 500 feet above the surrounding terrain, Ship Rock. But later travelers renamed it Monumental Rock, hence Lower Monumental Dam. The lake that begins at the foot of Lower Monumental and continues to Ice Harbor Dam 22 miles downriver is named for the Lewis and Clark Indian guide Sacagawea. The lake created by Lower Monumental has a less memorable name, Herbert G. West, which celebrates the first leader of the Inland Empire Waterways Association, a precursor to today's Pacific Northwest Waterways Association. The lake is 28 miles long and extends upriver to the foot of Little Goose Dam. In the process of filling Lake West, the Marms Rock Shelter, a rock alcove near the mouth of the Palouse River, flooded. Human bones found there in 1968 were more than 10,000 years old, the oldest ever found in the Western Hemisphere at the time. A cofferdam intended to keep water out of the archaeological site failed as Lake West was being filled. Marm's Rock Shelter is now under 40 feet of water. The dam closed its floodgates in February 1969, and the first vessel to transit the Lower Monumental Lock did so on April 15th. Although Ice Harbor, Little Goose, and Lower Granite were all constructed under the auspices of the Corps of Engineers Walla Walla District, Lower Monumental was the handiwork of the Seattle District of the Corps. At the time, the Walla Walla District had its hands full, and Seattle was poised to lay off staff. When the dam was completed, responsibility for it was passed back to Walla Walla. Certainly, Neil Armstrong's walk on the moon on July 20th was a bigger story in 1969 than the completion of Lower Monumental Dam, but remembering that both events occurred 5 decades ago helps us synchronize our watches, so to speak. 50 years is a long time when it comes to the first moon landing, but it's even longer for facilities like LOMO, which is made of concrete, not memories. Although there are a lot more civilians who work at the dam than there are actual members of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, there's a definite military feel, mostly because of the language used. Everything is mission this or mission that, and there's lots of abbreviations that need explanations, like USAS, which is short for U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. There are 65 positions at LOMO Dam in all sorts of capacities. Within the Walla Walla District, there are about 900 employees. Of those, about 38% are former military. Joe and I arrived at the Franklin County side of LOMO, where our car was escorted across to the Walla Walla County side. About a dozen of us gathered on an out-of-the-way apron of concrete to hear from Jeanette Wilson, operations project manager at Lower Monumental. She's in charge of ensuring the dam works as advertised, which includes getting repairs, maintenance, and upgrades done on schedule. She opened the tour by explaining why we were there.
Why are we here today? Well, it's our annual routine maintenance program. This is something that's coordinated that we work through across Walla Walla District and Portland District so that we take the system down at the same time. Why? Because of all of you. It's to minimize the impacts to you. If I was to take my lockdown because Don Redman is chief of maintenance and Sarah is my chief of ops, and they say, hey, Jeanette, we've got this problem and we want to take the lockdown. Okay, make it so. And we take the lockdown. Well, then about a month later, the staff at Lower Little Goose or Lower Granite or down in Portland could do the same thing. So we do this annually so that you could plan around it and we plan our maintenance requirements. If we've got something that happens during the year, if we can make it so that you don't have to, if we don't have to take the lockdown, it can wait. That's why we do that. It's to help minimize impacts. It helps us with our planning. We're at Snake River Mile 42. So that puts us at about 32 river miles from Ice Harbor and about 28 to Little Goose. So as you can see, we're pretty remote. If you were to look at the map, for you all drove it, we are out in the middle of nowhere, and it stays this way. When we need repair parts or we need to do anything, we do have to think in advance. It's not just you can hop down to the store and grab it. The store is about an hour away. And so it's really important that we plan for those types of things. We also have a number of missions that are going on at the same time. Lower Monumental has about 60 personnel on site at any given time. And this is of electricians, mechanics, operators, engineers, administrative staff, and security guard, and management. So if you look at the breakout of your mechanics and electricians who can actually get work done, it's about half of your personnel. But it's not just a navigation lock that's going on right now also. We're also generating power. We have 6 155 megawatt hydropower generation units. So it's using the flow of the river. And those very large turbines are spinning at about 90 RPM to generate power for us that BPA owns the transmission lines and sends out across the West Coast. We also do fish passage. We have our dam, but we have adult and juvenile enlisted species, salmon and any other type of fish that you can think of in the river that's trying to get upstream and downstream. Well, our adult ladder, when you walk over, you can look over the wall. We have two fish ladders. They were constructed with the dam so that we could get the adult salmon upriver and they could pass us. If you look over when you go on the other side, there's also kind of this weird facility with a bunch of pipes and flumes going to it. That's our juvenile fish facility. That is so that the juveniles can pass through downstream, and we have a system and networks of pipes and screens along the entirety of the dam to get the juveniles through also if they don't pass through the spillway gate. So that's another mission we're working on. We also have our dam and spillway that we have to maintain so that we maintain compliance with dam safety that maintains the pool, or if the water gets too high, that we're releasing the right amount of flows. Not to mention, if we stop all the water here, then Ice Harbor's not generating and you're not putting boats in the water like you want to do. At the end of the day, it's a very complicated system. You're like, oh, it's just the Snake River and it's pretty easy. But it's a very complicated system because we're doing hydropower, we're passing water, we're passing fish, and at the same time, we've got to keep the right levels and the right flow of velocities so that navigation can pass through safely too. And who's maintaining all of that? Our small group of electricians and mechanics, which then is set up in these maintenance cycles. Navigation is not the only one that has a maintenance cycle. We have our fish maintenance cycle that goes on about mid-December through early February. And then we also do our dam and spillway. Our spillway maintenance tends to be about mid-September through, and we try to be done by the wintertime because you don't want to be out here in the cold. But spill doesn't tend to start until about 1 April. And our navigation maintenance tends to be right here in this time period of March. And then hydropower for our units, we're tending to do our maintenance on those assets in the late June, early July through mid-December timeframe. And it's just so that we can make sure that we're getting everything we need to do to keep the place reliable. And this place takes a little bit more work than it used to. If you're not aware, the first lockage took place for Lower Monumental in April of 1969. So this is our 50th anniversary year. So it's a really great time to be out at LOMO, and it's really exciting to share that with folks. And so we have to put a little more effort into some of the maintenance that we do. A lot of the equipment that you see today is going to be original equipment. And the guys do a lot of neat, creative things to keep it going and the operators to keep it operating. Just a good news story that we wanted to talk about this year is our floating guide wall. If you look out over here on this wall with the timbers, and you see the seagulls out there and the windsock, that is our floating guide wall. If we walk up to the, we can just walk up a little bit. You can see where the wood stops and it connects to the concrete wall. Well, it's on a keyway system, and if you want to look at the photos over here, you can take a look at them. So what's happening is that the wall that's got all the wood on it, the timbers, is floating on a keyway that's attached to the concrete wall, and it's got a cable system underneath it. We got to have this for safety of navigation. If this wall goes away, our nav lock shuts down for a little bit to do repairs. So this year we got the funding, the divers came in, they replaced the key. It's something that we had been working on for a few years. So it's a good news story that we knew that it was a condition that was a concern of ours, and we're able to get it fixed. And in fact, the company that did it was able to get it done a lot faster than they had previously scheduled. So just a really great thing that increased the reliability.
The four lower Snake River dams are known as run-of-the-river hydroelectric dams, which are not intended to store a lot of water, like Grand Coulee Dam, which is, by the way, a gravity dam, where the pressure of the water actually holds the dam in place. Cool, huh? I have some photos on the Washington Grain Commission's Facebook page of our trip to the dam. One of Lower Monumental's claims to fame among the four Snake River dams is that it is the longest at 3,791 feet. Run-of-the-river dams aren't much to look at, nothing like the iconic Hoover Dam, for instance, which is an arch-gravity dam, but they get the job done, providing not only inexpensive hydroelectric power, but navigation, recreation, and flood control. Sarah Wilson, no relation to Jeanette, serves as LOMO's power plant manager. She gave the locks specifications in terms both familiar and curious.
The lock's 675 feet long, it's 86 feet wide, and we have a 100-foot lift here. The way the lock is filled, we've got a fill valve on either side of the channel, and then there's two drain valves that we open depending on if it's a downstream lockage. We'll fill the lock up, we'll lower the upstream gate, let the barge in, close the gate, drain the lock. And this entire process takes about 28 minutes going down, and it's 27 minutes going upstream. Anybody have any ideas or want to guess how much water the lock holds? I had to geek out last week. I sat down and figured it out. It's 5.8 million cubic feet of water, or about 43 million gallons of water. So that's enough to cover, for your ranchers, that's enough to cover 155 acres of land 1 foot deep. Or it's 66 Olympic-sized swimming pools. And we're able to do that in 27 minutes using just gravity from the pool, and then we use gravity to drain the lock out. If you were going to stick your yard garden hose in it, anybody want to take a guess on how long it would take to fill it up? Yeah, about 6.5. Yeah, just a little bit north of 6.5. It's like, I never would have thought that. And I came up from Texas, so, you know, seeing this happen in on an inland river is astonishing to me. And so going back to the fill valve and the drain valves, they're 14 feet wide and 12 feet tall. And we move that volume of water through those spaces via gravity. And I think last year we had something in the neighborhood of about 300 or 400 lockages. Mostly, you know, most of it was commercial, but we did have a few wreck and fish type barges. So think of the wear and tear on the original equipment. On an annual basis, our maintenance program, we go in and inspect the drain valves and the fill valves annually. We only unwater the lock like we have this year once every 5 years, and that's also a dam safety requirement. So we'll actually get down in the laterals and the culverts beneath the lock and inspect those for damage, concrete erosion, things of that nature.
How long is concrete good for? I mean, you have this dam here for 50 years. Can it go another 50 years in terms of the concrete?
I know that across the country there's dams that have been there in excess of 100 years. They're still in use. So I think we have at least 50 more to go.
Next up on our dam tour was Kenny Koberlein, the navigation business line manager, the man in charge of the lock maintenance. It's a big responsibility anytime, but especially when you're new to the job.
Wet behind the ears. I've been in the job now for about 3 months, but I am an infrastructure guy. So kind of what drives my train a lot is knowing the condition of the assets on the locks and dams, and then I'm the person who tries to line up the budget, get items into the president's budget for funding, for plans and specifications, and the contract work to get things repaired. So one of the things that Don will talk to you about is the work that they've been doing on the tainer valves, which allow water in and out of the navigation lock, and what's been happening with those during this outage. I have the longer term, bigger picture view, which is that those assets are 50 years old and they have a life. And there's a lot of assets here on the lock and the dam that have a life. The miter gates are a big item. Gudgeon anchors that hold the miter gates to the lock walls, etc. And LOMO has issues on those assets, but the other locks and dams also have issues on those assets. So the inspection programs that we have, I'm very tuned into. So every 5 years, we do what we call periodic inspections. And just last week, we had a periodic inspection that Daniel was on, I was on, others were on. And we went in and walked the culverts that the water flows through to water up the locks. We found concrete damage caused by cavitation. You know, all that water runs through at a high rate of speed, you know, to do what Sarah was talking about. It causes damage to concrete. So there's exposed one-inch rebar down there. There's cracking along the monoliths, and it's part of life. You know, just like I had to have a knee replaced because, you know, for reasons, well, the locks need some maintenance too. So what my job will be to do is to make sure that the condition of these assets is recorded and that headquarters USACE understands the conditions of our assets, and then we prioritize. You know, we've got just a set amount of money available, and we're competing with all these other districts for it. And we make the case for our assets, and then we try to have ourselves ready and able to execute when the funding arrives. So tainer valves are a big issue. Right now, Goose's got two tainer valves that I'm requesting for fiscal year 21. LOMO is also high on that. McNary's getting two tainer valves replaced just in a few months. So they're going to be on two valve operation also. So the picture I'm trying to paint for you is that the Corps of Engineers has a inspection program. You know, we do PIs, we do periodic assessments, we do what's called operational condition assessments is another type of inspection. But the condition of our valves and our gates is now driving us to do what we call HSS, which is hydraulic steel structures inspections. Instead of doing them every 5 years, now we're going to be doing them every 1 year because of the damage that you're going to see that and Don's going to talk about. So those things are very important to our program. We've got a very robust inspection program, and we have a process for moving out and getting things repaired so that we don't interrupt navigation.
Levi Van Statham is an electrical engineer with the district whose job is to upgrade the electrical systems at the dam. As a reminder of how far we've come since 1969 when the dam's original systems were installed, let me remind you that smartphones today have more computing power than existed on board the Apollo 11 moon lander. I don't know if that extends to the electrical systems at the locks, but listening to Levi talk, it's obvious there's room for improvement.
One of the concerns that we have right now is, and that we're currently addressing, is the design for the electrical distribution for the nav lock itself. The distribution is broken up between two substations, an upstream and a downstream, and as the rest of the equipment around here, it's 50 years old. And if you can imagine, there's been a lot of advances in both safety and efficiencies and equipment for electrical components since installed. One of the big things that we're trying to address is safety, which is arc flash hazards. So that not only is going to help increase safety for operating personnel here, but it's also going to help increase reliability. The new equipment is much safer and has a lot less incident energy, and so it allows our maintainers here to be able to do their job more efficiently and in a safer manner. The other thing that we're trying to address with this is the cabling that is – this nav lock is powered all the way from the powerhouse, which is a long ways over there. If you can't see, it's all the way – about 1,600 feet of cable, and that is, again, 50 years old. We've had instances where there's been deterioration in some of the insulation, which has caused, back in the 80s, we had a flash, a ground fault, and some other concerns that are getting not better, right? So as you can, you'll be able to see, when we go down and we'll walk down the crossover gallery, if you'll take a look and you'll notice what they call cable trays, that's how we route all of the cables in and out of all of the spaces around here. Over the years, they've been added to, and unfortunately, some of the stuff hasn't been taken out. So our fill ratio is beyond what the capacity is for code. So we're trying to bring that back to where it needs to be, again, increasing the reliability. Another aspect that we're looking at for doing in this design is reliability-focused, is providing redundancy within the system. So currently, we have the upstream substation room here is sized essentially twice as large as the downstream, and they are connected together. So if something happens downstream, we can feed that from the upstream, but we can't go the other way around. And so what we're trying to do is the design is focusing on providing the equipment that provides actually dual redundancy. So that'll ensuring that the nav lock stays open. Let's see, redundancy. Trying to run through my, you gotta bear with me. I have a 4 week old at home too, so so the brain's still catching up. In order to be able to accommodate, we've had in the past the long 8 week outages. Well, I think it was 12 week outage for the last long term outage. What my team is focusing on doing, as far as the replacement goes, to minimize that downtime and to be able to fit within this 2 to 3 week window and not impact the operation of the nav lock, is we've actually taken into account and phased the replacement of the equipment in these spaces that allows us to remain operational and fit all of what we need to do in the amount of time that is going to take place during a normal nav lock outage. So we're trying to get around those long 8 week or 12 week outages, which I know really affects pretty much everybody that's here. So that's why you guys are here. It does take a little bit extra money for us to be able to do that, unfortunately, just because we have to kind of shoehorn everything in there. And once you go in there, you'll see that there's really not a lot of real estate, not like right here. So in order to be able to get that done, it's having to think outside the box and kind of having us to do construction in an abnormal way that we wouldn't normally do it. Everything in here is copper, yes, but it is also 50-year old insulation and jacketing. So with, again, the cable fill and the cable trays is a little bit exceeded on some of the times, and so it's just getting a little bit older.
Next week, we go down inside the dam, which is not as solid as you might think. I'm not saying you could get lost in the passageways, but I'm glad I had directions. Please join me here again next week for the second part of A Visit to LOMO, the Apollo 11 of Snake River Dams, right here at Weed All About It.
You think we're simple, you think we're not right. Look at your cities and ask yourself who's right. We've got country and you've got crime. We've got green and you've got grime. Let there be no doubt, we have what it takes to till the soil until our back aches. Just give us a break and don't be so rude. We love the work and you love the food.
We feed you.